Veterans Military Affairs have come back to order. I'm going to cover the agenda real quick right now. We're going to, for the sake of moving things quickly through to the processors, we're going to have a work session on SB 1559 and SB 1563. I'm going to do SB 1563 first, I believe. Yeah, 1563 first, and then we'll move to 1559, and then we'll have a couple of short hearings, public hearings on some House bills. So with that, I'm going to open work session 1563, which is, and 1563, if you'll tee us up here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, 1563, the underlying measure is the one that allows for certain state law protections that are already benefit to military service personnel in the state, extends those same benefits to members of the Commissioned Corps of the National Atmospheric and Oceanic Administration. It declares an emergency as effective on passage. The Dash 1 amendment, which was discussed at our last meeting on the 7th, permits the same extension to members of the Commissioned Corps of the United States Public Health Service. The Dash 3 amendment that you heard testimony on today requires community colleges to follow guidelines similar to universities. And the Dash 4 amendment is a standalone applicability provision on the underlying measure. If the committee moves the Dash 3, the Dash 4 is not necessary. If the Dash 3 doesn't move, then the Dash 4 would be included to affect the underlying bill.
Okay, run that by me.
You don't need to do all three.
Yeah.
We need the
you
one
would be in the alternative, Dash 3 or Dash 4. You don't need both, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, so what's the...
What's the difference, yes.
What's the difference? You lost me again here.
The Dash 4 is a standalone applicability provision on the underlying measure. So okay. In the event
I'm
the
an
Dash
3... Let's back up here. My intent is to try and move the Dash 1 amendment, which is the public corps, and then to solve the community college issue and send it to the far side if we have the vote. So do I need the Dash 4?
You can disregard the Dash 4, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so what we really need is the Dash 1 and the Dash 3.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes, madam.
Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 1563.
Senator Moniz Anderson moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill or Senate Bill 1563. Is there discussion? Is there opposition?
Mr. Chair, would that be the Dash 1 that's dated 12612? Or is there a newer one?
There's only one Dash amendment. Only one.
Okay. So it's one, that would be the Dash 1 dated 12612.
Correct.
For clarification.
For clarification. Further discussion. Is there opposition? If not, the Dash 1 amendment is moved into the main bill. Madam Vice Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 1563.
Senator Moniz Anderson moves the Dash 3 amendment into SB 1663. Is there discussion?
Just a comment. Having worked with disadvantaged families forever in my profession as a public health nurse. Yes, there may be some families that will really reap the benefit, and there are others that will moderately get by, but you can't believe the ramifications of assistance to disadvantaged folks, and I consider widows and orphans disadvantaged folks in making them become better citizens in society. They've already had tragedy and chaos and in their lives. So this just seems a no-brainer for me.
Thank you. Other discussion? Any opposition? Seeing no opposition, the Dash 3 is into the main bill. Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1563 as amended with the Dash 1s and the Dash 3s to the floor. Does it go to Ways and Means? No. To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Moniz Anderson moves SB 1563 as amended with the Dash 1 and the Dash 3 to the floor for the due pass. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk call the roll, please.
Senator Corbin?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moniz Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Boquist?
Boquist votes yes. The bill will go to the floor. I'll carry it, and I'll talk to Senator Berger in regards to if she wants to co-carry for the other portion of the bill.
And pass for the Dash.
He's in the next bill. With that, I'm going to close the work session on 1563, and I'm going to open a work session on SB 1563. And before we move, excuse me, 15, open work session on 1559.
Yeah. 15.
And I would ask that Paul Snyder and Scott, you want to put something on the record too? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. Mr. Chair and members, there was a discussion between Senator Olson and General Caldwell a little while ago identifying the issue of what happens if there is a mis-expenditure of funds. And the question, I think, related to the current system. Because as I recall, what General Caldwell said is that annually each city and county must have an audit and report the results to the Secretary of State. So if there is a mis-expenditure of funds, then the city or the county must pay it back from other funds other than the 911 funds. I'd be very grateful if we could get something on the record from the committee as to what would happen under this bill. In other words, funds would be paid under the bill directly to the 911 jurisdiction. If the 911 jurisdiction misspends funds, then whose responsibility is it to pay the funds back? And I'm assuming that's the 911 jurisdiction, not the city or the county, to whom the allocation under General Caldwell suggested amendments would be made. It would help us a great deal if we had something from the committee that would either affirm or refute that.
Scott?
For the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. I think the League would be more comfortable if the bill spelled out the liability question and we went beyond simple legislative intent and record. To address some testimony further, I stand by my previous remarks. We do believe that this bill could potentially complicate the ability of cities and counties to direct those 911 funds where they need to go, where they would like them to go.
Thank you. Representative Sheehan, would you come up to the...
Mr. Chair, while he's coming up, I mean, it makes common sense that if the funds are misused, that it would be under the jurisdiction of where the money went. I'm not sure if that's what the rest of the committee feels, but the cities are out if the money's not passing through them.
Representative Sheehan, I mean, two issues have been raised. One is the issue that they just raised, which I don't have a problem with the House resolving that. And the second issue that's been raised is the potential definition of allocation versus distribution, which I don't know whether that's an issue or not, but that's something, again, as far as I'm concerned, the House can address on that side. And I think if you just advise the committee that you recognize these may not be issues, and this is something that can be addressed on the other side if necessary.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I already have notes to do that once it gets to the House, and I have no problem with it. I think the intent is crystal clear as it stands, but if this makes it even more crystal clear, we'll do that.
Thank you. You have a comment, Senator Cornyn? No?
No, not really, because I'll get it. No.
Right. We're trying to move quickly, Senator.
I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. Mr. Dewey, if you'd be kind enough to come up here. Just for the record so that we know, the original underlying bill was the multi-line bill that was there. It still needs a little bit of work. We thought there was a dash 11 in the last session that we used as the guidance, and it turned out we all thought there was a dash 11, and there was no dash 11 in the last session. There's actually a dash 10 annotated from someplace else. And so we ended up kind of going back to a dash 4, and with 95 people in the work group, the chair did not deem that it was a good idea to get 95 signatures on this work group at this point in time, and so we kind of need to work on this. Senator Olson? On the underlying original bill, I believe we're going to kind of go back to a work group at some time in the spring. Is that correct?
Yes.
And do you have an idea of when that is?
Yes, we will set date certain. If you'd give me one moment, please.
Because this underlying bill we've been at since 2005. So?
March 27th.
Do we Okay, and we'll start where, Mr. Dewey, you have any comments? Just for the record.
Yes, Mike Dewey for the record, the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. In talking with you, Mr. Chair, and other members, we're getting very close. There are some technical issues, and we want to get everybody in the room and literally go line by line to make sure it works. There's some applicability, definitions, effective date that we need to deal with, and we'll call all the parties and have a nice party and go through this, and I think we can get it done pretty quickly.
I will take care of all the arrangements.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's the chair's intent in the multi-line issue is that the dash 11, which I don't have, but I have a dash 4 of the existing bill, which is supposed to be the dash 11 from the last session, is if we can't get this resolved, then I will bring it back as the dash 4 and ask the committee to introduce it as an LC pre-filed in the next session, and that's the bill we'll run with regardless, because we need to get this date certain ended, finished.
Mr. Chair.
Quickly,
for clarification, our baseline was 2076-10 that we used from last session.
Good start.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Dewey.
Thank you.
With that, we are in a work session in regards to SB 1559. We've heard testimony on the Dash 4 amendment. I've allowed the cities and the counties to come up and put into the record their additional concerns outside of their testimony. I have talked to members on the far side of the chamber and committee chairs, so on and so forth, and they're happy with this. If we will entertain them to send it to the far side.
Mr. Chair.
I
move the dash 4 amendments into Senate Bill 1559.
Senator Moniz Anderson moves the dash 4 amendments into SB 1559. Discussion?
And and I think it is important, that we are making... We do want to have on the record that cities aren't going to be held liable for misuse of the funds if they go right to the 911 jurisdiction. Mr. Chair, that's all I want to discuss.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Seeing no further discussion, is there any opposition? If there's no opposition, the Dash 4 amendment is moved into SB 1559. Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1559 as amended with the Dash 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. No referral.
Madam Vice Chair moves SB 1559 as amended with the Dash 4 to the floor with a due pass. Any further discussion? Senator Courtney?
No.
Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Please call the roll.
Courtney.
Yes.
Senator
Wilson.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Monson. Aye. Chair Bogus. Aye. SB 1559 as amended goes to the floor with a due pass. At this point, I will carry the bill and Representative Sheehan will provide me additional information since this is a House favor on that side. Appreciate that. With that, I'm going to close the work session on SB 1559. I'm going to jump to the front of the calendar, and I'm going to open a public hearing on HJM 201, which is a memorial urging Congress to pass Chiropractic Care Available to All Veterans Act. If you would please, Madam Vice Chair. Excuse me, Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HJM 201 urges Congress to pass the Chiropractic Care Available to All Veterans Act.
And Mr. Sabo, Byrne, you there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Dr. Byrne Sabo representing the Oregon Chiropractic Association and the American Chiropractic Association, and I serve on the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee of the ACA, and I'll be in our nation's capital Thursday in hopes of lobbying our congressional delegation to follow through with what Congress by law instructed the VA to follow through with 10 years ago. Public Law 107-135 and Public Law 108-170, which were passed in 2002, instructed the Department of Defense to provide chiropractic services for all active duty personnel in all branches of the service, and also for the Veterans Administration to provide chiropractic services to all veterans. It's been 10 years. The Portland VA has not hired a full-time chiropractic physician. Apparently in Seattle, they have hired one, two, or three chiropractic physicians, but that does little to help Oregon veterans. Chiropractic services are also not available, readily available in the outpatient clinics, and referrals to chiropractic physicians' clinics of VA of veterans is haphazard and intermittent. Musculoskeletal injuries such as back injuries are the leading reason veterans are accessing the VA following returning from the Middle East. Back injuries, which are not treated properly in the theater, tend to end up becoming chronic reoccurrent cases, which costs the VA. Financially cost the VA considerable amounts of money at the same time, and human terms cost our veterans. So as far as back injuries in combat, they have the lowest return to unit rate of all injuries of only 13%. So the current interventions, medical treatment they're receiving, which is primarily pharmacology, a couple Advil, are not getting the job done. The analogy I use that I used at the Veterans Day dinner in Linn County a couple years ago was, if in fact the river was running high and a barge broke loose and ran into the Broadway Bridge and damaged the structure of the bridge, would you call in a chemical engineer or would you call in a civil structural engineer? And we're the structural engineers of the back of the spine. And our veterans deserve better. They deserve a structural treatment for a structural problem. So germane to that, the Oregon State Evidence-Based Guidelines Development via the Oregon Health Sciences University's evidence-based policy and through the Health Services Commission, now the Health Evidence Review Commission, have adopted permanent low back pain guidelines. And the only non-pharmacological intervention that is recommended for the first 4 weeks of an acute episode of low back pain is spinal manipulation. Chiropractic physicians are best trained to provide that service. It's not the only tool in our toolbox, but it's what we're known for. 94% of all spinal manipulation is performed by chiropractic physicians. We're the best trained to perform that service. So it's our intention to present, to hand deliver this joint memorial to the Portland VA medical director in hopes of getting him off stuck and getting going on what Congress instructed the Portland VA to institute long ago. We have Congressman Blumenhauer and Congressman Schrader, who I was with Saturday, who are very much in support and are going to attempt to be at the meeting either in person or by phone. They're in district staff. Also our senators, Senator Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden, are also are going to attempt to either be at the meeting or more likely by phone conference, and their district staff will be there, and also the House members of the Veterans Committee on in this building have committed to being at the meeting, and my hope is that the chair and possibly members of the committee would also be willing to entertain the thought of being at this meeting in hopes of getting something going with the Portland VA, and I would notify you of that date. That completes my testimony. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be willing to answer any questions if you have any.
And Vern, I appreciate you bringing this forward. This has been around for a couple of years, and I know you've been working on it. Madam Vice Chair, questions? Mm-hmm. Senator Olson, do you have questions?
I do have a statement. As a trained chemist, I say live better with chemistry, but I agree with you 100% on this bill. It's important that we take care of our veterans, and we do it with every tool in the toolbox.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, being a good infantry person, you definitely walked into the ambush for this. The Senate President has asked me to try and move both of the memorials today because they're non-substantive bills and we're getting backed up. So if with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HJM 201 and open a work session on HJM 201 to provide the opportunity for Senator Olson to carry this. Madam Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move HJM 201 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, or adopt.
Senator Bonas-Anderson moves HJM 201 to the floor with a due adopt. Is there discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Senator Bonas-Anderson? Dr. Olson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Ron Sanderson.
Aye.
Chair Buckley.
Aye, and for the record, Senator Courtney is excused on Senate business. HGM 201 goes to the floor with a do adopt, and Senator Olson will be hearing. With that, I'm going to close the public or the work session on HGM 201, open a public hearing on HGM 202. Representative Boone, good to see you over here. We were just doing favors for your house a few minutes ago. It got me in lots of trouble.
What did you say? I'm sorry, I missed that.
We were just doing favors for the House of Representatives a few minutes ago, and it's gotten me in hot water, but that's okay.
That's good to hear, though.
That's right.
Happy Valentine's Day. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and I'm here bringing you, I'm the emissary of another group bringing you this House Joint Memorial. The Pacific Fisheries Legislative Task Force made a commitment of all five state members to pass, and you'll notice I said pass, similar memorials to Congress after viewing what was going on in Kodiak, Alaska. The Coast Guard, as you know, performs many different functions. They monitor the fishing, they rescue, they monitor drug trafficking, etc. They're the only member of this military that's a member of the in Homeland Security. And what this memorial does is it asks the President and the Congress, the U.S. Congress, to give full funding to the Coast Guard to further do their duty. There's been some reduction in their equipment and their resources, and at the same time they've been asked to cover even more and more, in the case of Alaska, more territory now with the Arctic opening up, and so there's a lot of activity up there. It's kind of like the old California Gold Rush, and the Coast Guard's the it group to take care of things up there. With the fact that they have fewer resources to work with and more territory to cover and more work to do in that sense, they really need the equipment. When we were there, for example, and I think this kind of was the impetus for this action, and they didn't ask for it. We saw it, and we decided to go ahead and do this. They had a call, a rescue call, out at the end of the Aleutian Chain, and if you know where Kodiak is from there, from your view, the Aleutian Chain would be out here. Kodiak's here, and it was a bad burn on a victim on a ship, and so they asked the ship to start steaming this way, and they would start going that way. But it took them a while to get going because they just come in off another call. They have to re-outfit the bird and scramble the troops and everything. And so anyway, long story short, an hour into that activity, and they still hadn't left yet, they got the call to cancel. And as you know, Senator Ronna Sanderson, that was probably because the victim had died. But the point is that if they had had a station out there, a helicopter stationed out at the end of the chain, your view, they could have made it quicker, possibly saved the victim. And this is just one example. They talk about having a situation happening up in the northern part of the state, and the birds are down here maybe for some, whatever reason. They just need more equipment to do their job more effectively. So we're asking that they do this. This passed unanimously out of our House Committee on Veterans Affairs and on the House floor. I think everybody here in the building, all of you and all of the rest of the legislators and staff and everybody who walks through this building knows somebody in the Coast Guard or has a constituent. And this is something we can all bring home, not just the coastal people. So I'd appreciate your adoption of this and hope that I can answer any questions you might have.
I would think as we're downsizing the military fighting force that there's, you know, an opportunity to put some funding back in that helps the state along the coast and helps, you know, not only protect, you know, citizens for safety issues and rescues like you're talking about, but they're also involved in trying to stem the flow of drug trade, and they're on the front line of terrorists coming across the ocean. Luckily, we don't have pirates like Somalia, Nigeria, and everybody else yet, but who knows? We might have that opportunity, too.
Yep.
Questions? Committee members? If there's no questions, we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HJM 202, and in light of the President's request, open a work session on HJM 202.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt HJM 202 and move it to the floor.
Madam Vice Chair moves we adopt HJM 202 to the floor with a do adopt. Is there discussion?
Just that I think this is extremely important. I mean, if we have a tsunami, Coast Guard is going to be able to react much quicker, especially if our roads are blocked, et cetera. So, makes sense.
See no further discussion. Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Senator Paulson.
Aye.
Vice Chairman Sanders.
Aye.
Chair Buckley.
Aye, and for the record, Senator Courtney is excused on business of the Senate. And with that, HJM 202 is adopted. And Senator Olson volunteered. I think they call them coasties, don't they?
Yeah.
Not troops. With that, I'll close the work session on HJM 202 and open our last public hearing of the day. This bill will not be moving, just a public hearing on HB 4064. Counselor?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4064 requires the Bureau of Labor and Industries to notify the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs when they receive information from service members that they have been discriminated against based on their military service. Requires the service members' authorization to make the notification. It defines uniformed service, and it has an effective date of July 1st, 2012. It's my understanding that this codifies BOLI's existing practice of communicating or notifying ODVA for these types of claims.
Thank you, Counselor. With that, Val Connolly, Kate Newell, and Greg Matthews. Actually, is that Representative Matthews?
Yes. He was in the hallway long ago.
I didn't know he was here for a deal. If you put Representative, we would know.
Even.
Well, see, Representative, if you had stayed in view, we would have called you up earlier. I apologize for that.
No apologies necessary, sir. Thank you.
And being the representative, we'll let you go first, and then the two ladies can fight about who goes second.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here today. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative, House District 50. It is Tuxedo Tuesday and Valentine's Day for anybody watching this at home. Here today to talk in favor of House Bill 4064 and to thank two agencies for getting together on this, what I think is a great concept and a great idea. Just to give a little bit of background, last session we were looking at a way to access veterans' benefits, and the best way to do that would be to look at, the no wrong door ideas and concepts and try to find a way to get veterans in touch with ODVA at different levels. One of the things that came up, but too late in session, was to have BOLI, when they're contacted by veterans, to contact the ODVA within a set time frame, and then ODVA would then be able to access the veterans' information. It came up late in the session. We weren't able to pass it through the chamber. And however, Labor Commissioner Avakian and his wonderful staff decided they would put that into a test trial and see if that would work and be effective. And it was. What resulted, and I think that Ms. Newhall will probably tell you, but less than a couple dozen cases, and over half of those resulted in veterans getting access to benefits they weren't aware that they had. The key to this component, I think, is that the veteran has to authorize BOLI to make the contact to ODVA. So there's that effort. And also, I think just to address the question that comes up is, if we're doing it now, then why do we need a law, or why do we need this in statute? The reality is we have a very veteran-friendly labor commissioner. The agencies are communicating well. But if not in statute, we run the risk of perhaps this continuity going away. And so this provides some framework and conduit, if you will, for communication between agencies. I think it sets a fine example on how the state can run better for our veterans. And to use Senator Olson's comment from earlier about a tool in toolbox, this is just one more tool in toolbox that I think works well for our veterans. And it's been proven to be effective, and I would urge your support. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate it. Which lady's going first? It looks like Val's going first.
If you want to
summarize,
we
have your written testimony, so
you
if you want to just summarize it.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, Val Connolly, Deputy Director, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We have been working in partnership with BOLI for the last year and a half. It's working wonderfully, and we fully support Senate Bill 4064.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Newhall with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We are also here today in full support of House Bill 4064. As you know, we're the agency that enforces our civil rights law here in the states, which includes our protections for members of the military service and our veterans hiring preference laws. So like you've heard before, 4064 simply codifies the existing practice that we have. We've actually made a modification to our civil rights intake form that has a pretty simple checkbox on it that asks every single person that's filing a civil rights complaint with us, whether it be a complaint alleging discrimination, sexual harassment, or looking for protections under our uniform service laws. In every single civil rights complainant is asked if they are a member of the uniform service, and if they check yes, the follow-up question is, would they like to have their information referred to ODVA to learn more about potential services and benefits that they might be eligible for? As you heard to date, we've been doing this process for about the last year. We started doing it immediately after the legislative session. It was a concept that we supported last session. I think it just simply ran out of time, so why not just start doing it? To date, we have identified about 15 members of the military service and referred them over to ODVA, and ODVA reports that about half of those have elected to receive services and follow-up from them. And I think it is just a great partnership. I think at Boley we're sort of the experts in employment and labor law. I don't know much about veterans benefits. I think it's appropriate to get them turned over to the experts in that department so that we can make sure that every single one of our service people that is eligible for services getting those services.
Thank you, and I appreciate the two agencies working closely together, and I think on behalf of all the committee members, if you would take back to Commissioner Avakian, we appreciate his efforts as he's continued since he's moved from the legislature to commissioner to protect and help veterans, and likewise, Val, again, please take the message back to Director Willis. We appreciate the heads of the two agencies working together to support veterans like we think they should, and representing, we appreciate you bringing it forward and codifying it, because as you well know, when we're all veterans, and what happens is 10 years from now, we all forgot what we thought they were going to do, and so this is a good step. Other comments or questions to the members of the committee?
With that, before I close the public hearing on HB 4064, because it is a substantive bill, it will be carried over and have a work session next week. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HB 4064. And committee members and for members of the public, I just want to bring you up to speed. Next week is really our last substantive meeting, and if other House bills do show up, contrary to what we normally do, which is hear a bill, public hearing bill, we have a substantive bill one meeting and then let members of the public come in and comment. Because this is a short regular session, next week is our last meeting. So if House bills do come to us between now and next week, they will have to be heard and have a work session if they're going to be moved next week. So I would urge members of the public, members of the lobby, veterans themselves, and committee members to pay attention to the bills, because if it's here next week, it'll live or die in that meeting. Other than that, we'll have no choices, simply the way it is. With that, we have gone through all of the work sessions. Luckily, we have 8 minutes to spare. I appreciate everybody's attention, and I apologize for some of the confusion on some of the bills. Again, it's a short session. They call it the turbo session on the far side. I think we're calling it organized insanity on our side. Mm-hmm, so with that, the meeting of the Senate Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs is ended.